Day, June 16th, on a rainy Thursday. So if we can start with the Pledge of Allegiance, Kelly Gant's going to lead us.
Our colors. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you very much for coming. John Corbett is not feeling well, so I am actually sitting in his chair today. We wish John a speedy recovery. With us today, Mr. Greg Giusti from Ukiah, Ms. Kelly Gant from Trinity Center, Mr. Jeff Hale from Eureka. Takes good practice. And Valerie Minton from Petaluma. I'm David Norton from Sebastopol. Matt, would you please introduce staff this morning?
Good morning, Matt St. John, Executive Officer. Good to see everybody. To my right is our Assistant Executive Officer, Shinrei Lee. To Shinrei's right is Nate Jacobson, our Senior Attorney. And to his right is Elizabeth Barrett. Across from me is Patty Corsi and Donna Poe working sound. And staff will introduce themselves when they present their items.
Fantastic. We did ex parte disclosure yesterday, but just in case somebody in the last 16 hours had an ex parte communication, is there any ex parte disclosure this morning for board members' conversation outside of the normal business operations? Seeing none, we will move on. This morning we have Mr. Steve Moore in the house from the State Board. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, a lovely good morning to you all. I'm Stephen Moore, board member on the State Water Resources Control Board and liaison to the North Coast region. And thanks for having me today on this June 16th, 16, if you didn't notice. So something worth noting, celebrating. Every day is worth celebrating. So as usual, I will go over from a State Water Board's perspective some of the things that have been going on. First, a little bit on budget, because this is sort of the budget season of the year. Where the governor's proposed budget is undergoing final review by the legislature for adoption for the 2016-2017 fiscal year. And then I'll talk a little bit about recent activities of the State Water Board. It's been a very busy spring, and I'll try not to go on and on too much, but talk about things of interest in the North Coast and over the last few months, because I haven't seen you since March, and then some upcoming items. And then finally, some legislation that's being considered where we've been asked to indicate our level of support or opposition, that if you're interested in tracking those things, a few bills to point out. In the budget, the water boards, the nine regional boards and the State Water Board have been fairly successful once again. I don't know if it's my lucky touch, but since I've been on the State Board since 2012, we've been very successful in obtaining new staff resources targeted toward pressing water quality and water supply issues throughout the state. So this year is not an exception. Most of our budget change proposals and spring finance letters and additional items in the governor's revised budget for May are being approved. One of which is an increase in the per diem for the regional board members. The proposal was to go to $500 a day from $100. The latest proposal I've seen is a kind of a compromise at $250. And it also includes time spent by regional board members preparing for the board meeting. For those in the audience, and I used to be on the regional water board in San Francisco Bay region, we get stacks of paper this high, sometimes in terms of having to review and be prepared for these meetings. So that's been brought in. And also an important feature, I think, that helps recognize that regions like North Coast, Central Coast, Lahontan, and Central Valley, which are very large hydrologic regions and require a lot of travel, instead of having region-specific caps, now we have a pool that is the aggregate of all of the funding for board members' travel and time, and that can be, and we've never exceeded the cap, the overall cap, and most regional boards don't exceed their existing caps, except those that have a lot of travel. So this system now will make it a lot more flexible in terms of meeting the funding needs that are specific to each region. So I think it's good news that what's proposed in this year's budget for regional board from the member's standpoint, having been one myself, I see the importance of this. There are regional board staff augmentations. I mean, a lot of the augmentation of staff in the state board system relates to drinking water. You may have heard about different initiatives in terms of encouraging the consolidation of drinking water systems. We have over 7,600 independent water systems that are public in this state. 7,600. For comparison, we have 58 counties. We have 127 groundwater basins of medium and high priority. 7,600 water systems. Okay, let's let that settle into everybody's mind. So the legislature has heard us, and from our Division of Drinking Water standpoint, we have a lot of work to do to facilitate better local water governance using state authority, and that's called SB 88. But in the regional board system, we've been successful in augmenting in the swamp program to the tune of 6 positions, in the site cleanup program, SB 445, which I've talked about before, dealing with some orphan site cleanups, something we've asked for years. And I believe there's one position proposed in the North Coast, but that's all under discussion. The way the positions are going to be allocated is a open collaborative process among the regions in the state. And then finally, on the issue of cannabis cultivation, the current proposal is 4 new positions that are permanent here in the North Coast region. One, I think, beneficial development in terms of our state and regional board coordination is we do monthly chairs calls, and Chair Corbett has participated, but also we have the executive officers participate in these calls, and we've been trying to engage the board members through the chair, and vice chairs are invited in, if time allows. To participate in the budget discussions, to talk about resource allocation among the regional boards, but also talk about the needs and develop proposals for future budgets with certain very surgical strategies in mind. To be successful, we can't ask for 40 new positions. We have about 2,000 positions overall in the state, but just throwing more staff at something is not a good strategy. We have to be very precise and tie it to current statewide initiatives that the legislature and the governor's administration are interested in. And so there's a way to be successful. So we go into those details on the monthly chairs calls, and we're looking at for the fiscal year 17-18 priorities, including beefing up enforcement staff to be able to hold folks to account on the permit conditions that we work hard to develop, and so to make sure that there's no economic benefit to those who do not comply is really the philosophy behind enforcement. And more on the irrigated lands program, which is a developing program. We're trying to find the right touch, working with our agricultural community to meet water quality standards over time. And both surface water and groundwater. And then also, and you've heard me talk about the California Water Action Plan, which is the administration's sort of promise to deal with the multiple aspects of water management. The regional boards and us, we're thinking about how the regional boards can better plug into implementing those elements of the governor's action plan and tying that to new positions at staff level. One example would be the in-stream flow proposals in the action plan, the 5 rivers, 3 of which are in the North Coast region, South Fork of the Eel, Shasta, and Mark West Creek of Russian River. So those are action plan initiatives that require state and regional board coordination on the water rights side and the water quality side, as an example. So that's a little bit about some of the budget talk, and I'm pleased from having my regional board experience, seeing more engagement in the budget process, and I hope folks in the regions feel the same way. Recently, the state board has been busy. In March, I'm not sure if I told you this, but we contracted with U.S. Geological Survey to develop an integrated hydrologic surface water groundwater model for the Russian River. We used our whole slug of SGMA money that the legislature gave us, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. We used the whole slug of money to fund USGS to do the surface water and groundwater model in the Russian River Basin as a real proof of concept on how we can provide technical tools to groundwater managers throughout the state to grapple with the issue of surface water-groundwater interaction and have the scientists really sharpen their tools and make that available statewide. It'll benefit also the interaction with the in-stream flow needs in a setting like this, for instance, Mark West Creek. In April, I think it's worth mentioning, you know, I'm also the liaison to the Central Coast region, and I have my roots in the San Francisco Bay region and in the L.A. region. But I think it's worthy of note that they had a third TMDL there in the Central Coast region that we adopted. There were no comment letters in April on the Pajaro River nitrate and phosphate TMDL. So I point to that as a good example of a process, but they actually have been refining it. They did an earlier TMDL on the lower Salinas River on nutrients and in the Santa Maria River, and so they sort of sharpened their craft going through those processes. But that was very worthy of note that a TMDL on nutrients for the area around Watsonville was a consent item with zero public comment letters.
That's incredible.
At the State Water Board. So that's Peter Osmolovsky is the staff over there. And that's a high standard.
Bring some of that mojo, Steve.
So I just always encourage cross-pollination with the regions and wisdom learned and all that, and tools developed. So you may have heard that we have changed the urban water conservation regulations. There's still an emergency regulation. The governor did issue a new executive order in May, really emphasizing the need to stay focused as a state and all the citizens on water conservation, but recognizing the hydrology was different this year, which is the norm for California. It's always different every year. And for us to be flexible and nimble in how we set up our accountability system for the water suppliers around the state, recognizing in some areas water supply may be sufficient to provide water for several years, even if a huge drought comes along. So we had a workshop in April, and at that workshop, there was some good creative thinking. The water suppliers came up with a system of self-certification that they proposed, and we worked with them to refine it. There's still, for all due respect to our colleagues in the media, I don't believe they've quite communicated the heart of the evolution of this regulation. People are not off the hook by any means. It's fairly stringent and conservative. What we're doing is we're requiring through a self-certification process that a water supplier assume that there'll be a drought for the next 3 years that's identical to the one we just experienced. So it would be hydrology identical to 2013, 14, and 15. Mm-hmm. And that if that hydrology was ahead of us, assuming demand from 2013, 14, which is a lower demand but not extreme low demand from last year, where would your water supply be in 3 years? And so the percentage that you fall short in that analysis would be the percent conservation standard required that the water supplier have to meet relative to 2013. So I anticipate there will be a lot of water suppliers that recommend 0%, in other words, holding performance to 2013 demands. And by the way, that's enforceable. If they don't meet 2013 demands, if they exceed that, we can take enforcement action on them, and will, if there's any backsliding. So to say that they're off the hook is not really true, but I think you'll see standards that will go from, the 20% reduction range down to between 0 and 10% based on this conservative analysis of water supply projection with extreme drought plus reasonable level of demand. So just wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit. We adopted that in May. And it's actually a very fluid, how many puns can I come up with the water theme? Right? It's a very fluid situation. But we're going to be getting these proposals in the next few days. So I don't know how it's all going to look until about a week from now. We're going to get a sense of what the proposed self-imposed standards are for the 411 water suppliers around the state that have over 3,000 connections. In May, we adopted Prop 1 groundwater grant program guidelines, and we're having workshops around the state for that. It's for groundwater cleanup, and I forget the exact number, but I think it's in the range of $800 million statewide. And a lot of demand is in areas where there's legacy large regional plumes, like that sometimes are associated with the 20th century defense industries. And so there's not really a lot of that here in this region. And I noticed that the public workshops aren't centered up here. It's not a slight to here, but just giving you an idea of the diversity of our water issues around the state. You know, one thing about the governor's May executive order, it also directed us to stay involved with Department of Water Resources and stakeholders on a long-term standard-setting process for conservation, you know, water efficiency-type expectations. And throughout all this process, you know, we've been really sensitive to the issue that, you know, doing percent reductions over and over is really not the way to go. That's sort of a stopgap approach because it kind of penalizes the gains folks have made prior to the baseline date. You know, you're all aware of that. So we've always emphasized there's a need for us as a state to commit to development of performance standards that are reasonable for water use in different climates and considering indoor use expectations. And that can help with rate setting, which ultimately is really important for water conservation. You know, if the rates are set appropriately, people will conserve. And a great example of that is the nation of Israel, where they raised water rates for agriculture and urban areas in around 2010. They went up 40% at one time to match the true cost of water and to remove subsidies. It was politically extremely difficult. But nobody's complaining anymore because now people use way less. The per capita rate has gone down significantly, and agriculture hasn't suffered whatsoever economically, but are using way less water, more crop per drop. So I just point people to that example is that there is a way to get to the next level on rates, and I think creating performance standards and expectations will be an important part of that. In June, we adopted the general order statewide for water recycling requirements. In the heat of the drought in 2014, one of the actions the State Water Board did was do a statewide order for, we had to do waste discharge requirements, and the recycled water community really hates that. You know, they don't like calling recycled water a waste. And so in updating that order and taking into account regional board input, and stakeholder input, trying to make treat recycled water as a resource, not a waste, it culminated last week into a statewide order. One of the it basically implements Title 22 of the Health and Safety Code for recycled water use for landscape irrigation, but also agriculture. Again, I bring up the Israel example. 65% of the agriculture in Israel, including all food crops, are irrigated with recycled water. 65%, including, and they've done the science over the years since the 60s, where they've looked very detailed about all food crops and any kind of uptake of any pollutants of concern, public health issues. And so, again, they are kind of a crucible of experience and science and implementation that we should look at with respect to some issues like water recycling. And so what's interesting in the discussion is that Title 22 doesn't address frost protection and the use of recycled water. And so this will be an area that the regional board here, we will look to, because it's not really an issue in other regions. And our drinking water staff, Division of Drinking Water, will work with you on that and work with stakeholders and figure out the right approach to using recycled water for frost protection. But I know staff here are supportive of trying to figure out the right approach. And from my perspective, I think it's a wise thing to pursue. And it's just a matter of answering questions and setting up the right type of surveillance that doesn't overburden. If you think about it, there's such a small mass of pollutants involved. If you have high-quality tertiary recycled water, even if there is runoff from frost protection, it's a drop in the ocean. And so I'm glad to hear you're working on it, and I encourage it. In this region, the Klamath Hydroelectric Project is a big deal. And I know you all have been following it a bit, but in our executive director's report this month, there's some updates. For what it's worth, on May 6th, PacifiCorp filed a motion to hold a relicensing proceeding in abeyance on an expedited basis with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. And it requests that FERC place the relicensing process in abeyance to allow time for PacifiCorp to transfer the license and title of facilities associated with the four main stem Klamath River dams to a dam removal entity known as the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. On May 23rd, the executive director, Tom Howard, filed with FERC an answer to the California State Water Resources Control Board regarding PacifiCorp's abeyance motion, which supports the request for an expedited FERC decision on PacifiCorp's request. So if FERC approves PacifiCorp's request and the dams are transferred to the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, then this new corporation will assume the liability and take the appropriate steps to decommission and remove the main stem Klamath River dams. And so that process is underway and moving quite quickly. On May 17th, State Water Board staff submitted comments to PacifiCorp recommending that the interim management committee that's formed under the KHSA will begin developing a priority list of projects and associated plans that PacifiCorp will fund with the $5.4 million following transfer of the Klamath River Dam facilities to this new corporation. And the representatives from the North Coast Board, Karuk Tribe, Yurok Tribe, Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and the Fish and Wildlife Service submitted similar recommendations to us. Your comments and others, we're trying to create a united front on this issue. I mentioned the in-stream flow-related work under the California Water Action Plan, and our staff have been meeting with parties to discuss ongoing efforts to enhance these stream flows statewide in at least five river systems that I mentioned. And we met with the Mendocino Resource Conservation District and Sanctuary Forest on May 12th. On May 13th, we met with Fish and Wildlife, also North Coast staff, State Park staff to discuss impacts to in-stream flows from legacy logging practices in the Bull Creek area of the South Fork of the Eel. And on May 26th, State Water Board staff met with representatives of the Karuk Tribe to discuss the tribe's interests and thoughts regarding the fisheries needs in the Shasta River and the Scott River. So, very busy times. At this time of the year, we adopt our intended use plans for Drinking Water State Revolving Fund and Clean Water State Revolving Fund, and we've taken the opportunity to revise the guidelines slightly for Prop 1 drinking water funding grants and small community wastewater grants. So I encourage your staff and you, if you're interested in trying to engage disadvantaged communities in your region to take advantage of these resources. Our staff and division is financial assistance. It's our mission in life to get money to disadvantaged communities to solve water quality problems. We're not interested in big competitions, or fancy proposals. And we encourage people to just send the application in. We'll work with them to figure out the right mix of funding to solve their wastewater and clean water and drinking water problems. And we'll think about ways to incorporate stormwater infrastructure if needed. We're really here to support disadvantaged communities in getting sustainable water systems up and running. So I've been following legislation lately. I've been getting a lot in my inbox about our legislative analyst, Rob Eagle, and his staff, or he's our director, and then we have analysts under him, on many, and again, you know, the last few years, there's just been a tidal wave, another water pun. keep a tally.
It's on the roll, man.
of legislative proposals. I'm going to drown in legislative proposals here. Some are good, some not so good. But, you know, with an eye towards solving water problems. That's from our perspective. But AB 2443, so 2443 is from Wood, would be a new tax on medical cannabis distributors, establishing a cannabis production and environmental mitigation fund. This is something we're interested in. And we currently, in its form, we have a support if amended position. It sets up funding, as I mentioned, for law enforcement to address illegal cultivation, competitive grant program for environmental cleanup, restoration of public and private land, supports a multi-agency task force. We'll make sure, you know, the regional boards are considered in that. We suggested amending it to give authority to the Secretary of Resources to direct funding to Fish and Wildlife and to consult with regional board and state board in grant administration. So little cleanup proposal, you know, suggestions that are in this dialogue on that bill. You know, there's a lot of bills on advancing recycled water, but they're a little on the aggressive side. AB 1738. AB 1738 is called the dark gray water, which is kind of ominous. Feels like, yeah. The dark side of the water. But so currently, we're not real. This idea of on site recycled water and, you know, grayer than gray kind of thing, which basically, let's be honest, it brings in the toilets. And, so there's some issues there with the public health protection. AB 1463 looks at on-site recycled water, something that we want to encourage, but with a lot of oversight and protection of public health. I think with all these drinking water proposals or recycled water, always remember the infrastructure, it works great when it first gets built. And it's a lot like a new car running off the lot. But in 10 to 15 years, that new car needs a lot of maintenance and upkeep. And the same goes for drinking water facilities and recycled water facilities. And so, you know, if you have an on-site recycled water system, that thing has to have oversight to prevent people from getting sick, you know. And so these safeguards aren't quite thought out in some of these proposals. Another one was AB 2022 from Gordon. To bottle and distribute recycled water for educational purposes to promote its acceptance. Well, currently, you know, maybe we got to put on the brakes a little bit and think about that. And I've tasted the recycled water. I've done the treatment plant tour at West Basin down in Redondo Beach. You know, I'm comfortable with it, but you know, this might be taking it a little far at this point. So one thing, it's SB 1263 we like. It's a drinking water division perspective, but from Wachowski, it would require applicants for new public water systems to do a technical report for supplying drinking water from adjacent systems first. I mentioned the 7600. You're going to hear me say that probably for the next 4 years because I just got reappointed to the state board. 7600. So we don't need 7,601 or two or three systems. And so this is to limit proliferation of new unsustainable public water systems. So we support this new bill. And it would give us authority to reject developments based on lack of water supply. AB 2480 from Bloom, and actually Clayton Krieger brought this to my attention last night, would recognize key watersheds in our state that feed Shasta and Oroville dams as actual, recognizing it as state infrastructure. This is interesting, and a lot of us have talked about this over the years. You know, how do we value watershed processes? Because they're so critical to meeting water, you know, safe water quality standards for drinking water and reliability. You know, healthy forests, healthy watersheds, good water quality, all those principles. But currently, the way you can invest in infrastructure doesn't really value those resources. So this is a, and it's interesting that lawmakers from Santa Monica, right, down in the heart of Los Angeles, and but recognizing that these are critical components of the water system, and the bill highlights that these five watersheds upstream of Shasta and Oroville do provide 80% of the state's reservoir capacity, support 25 million people's drinking water and 8 million acres of farmland just in those five watersheds. So it's compelling to me because, you know, my interest in sustainable financing and using this as value in a water infrastructure system that can be leveraged for further bond funding or, you know, and thinking of natural capital. So I think it's compelling. It's not perfect, but it's something that's started the discussion about kind of a green infrastructure side of the equation. And I've taken a lot of your time this morning, so I think with that, I'll leave it open to questions or help you move along on your agenda today. Thank you.
Steve, thank you very much. First and foremost, congratulations on being reappointed.
Thank
congratulations.
You.
That's probably not an easy process to go through, and you've been a tremendous asset to our work here. A couple things that just to start with here is that, for one thing, I appreciate your words and your support for some of the recycled water use here, frost particularly, and just developing some good methods and science and a way to deal with that. I appreciate that. The other thing is with the USGS, the surface and groundwater modeling, I think this is a perfect place to do it. Frankly, I think we've got all the elements here. The USGS baseline study and modeling that was done at the Santa Rosa Plain is absolutely off the chart great that USGS did, and to see this type of modeling then continuing to look at conjunctive use and everything else that's in that system is awesome. So I really appreciate that. Last thing, SB 445, you're close to my heart right there. And those orphan site accounts are super important to get at some of the old legacy sites. We do have a few up here. And very, very last, the support for us to have staff to do our work here and in certain key areas is much appreciated. I know that cannabis is the big go-to right now. At the same time, some of the ag permitting and other things we have going on too is great. So thank you very much. Any other board questions or comments to Mr. Steve Moore? Mr. Giusti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, thank you as always. I want to just, you piqued my interest with the last piece of legislation and looking at watersheds as part of the state's infrastructure. You know, there are, and I don't have to tell you this, but you know, there are so many environmental and social values as well to these watersheds. I would ask that if this moves down the line, that the economic aspect of the trifecta of sustainability, economic, environment, and social not become so dominant that these watersheds begin to look like nothing more than conduits for water. There's a lot more values to these. So keeping that trifecta, keeping that milking stool even, that three-legged stool even as this moves forward, for me personally, would be very important. I like the flip side of that is that people are starting to take a holistic view of where water comes from and the value of our natural landscapes. But a lot of those watersheds have a number of other issues. Particularly, how do we manage trees to allow more water to move through the system? We know that in California, most forests are horribly overstocked, intercepting millions and millions and millions of gallons of water that and preventing those from getting to surface streams or even groundwater. So I think it's a great start. I'm going to look to people like you to make sure that it's a balanced approach as this new thinking emerges. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Great comments.
Any other questions or comments? Thanks, Steve. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to public forum. Public forum is a time and place for